protests rock Jacksonville and the nation. Good Monday morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. And just ahead, a closer look at this weekend's I Can't Breathe protests across the city. Some unrest, some arrests, and a curfew. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, preparing for hurricane season. Guess what? It starts today. First this hour, the COVID crisis continues, so we do want to note the latest numbers. Statewide, the Department of Health reports 56,163 COVID cases across the state, 2,451 deaths. In our area, we have 2,543 cases, 94 deaths. Two new deaths overnight in Duval County and one in Putnam County. The city of Jax again closed testing for the coronavirus pandemic at Lot J and the Legends Center for this Monday, citing public safety concerns. Now let's talk about that. Dozens of protesters, you may have heard, gathered in the streets over the weekend, first outside the Duval County Jail, then the Duval County Courthouse, then lots of other places around the urban core, to call for an end to police brutality in this city and across the nation. They also are calling for the release of body cam videos that the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office hasn't released to the public that reportedly document controversial interactions with police. The protests on Saturday in our city started off peacefully, but then they turned destructive and sometimes violent Saturday night. The weekend's events prompted Jack's Mayor Lenny Curry to announce a citywide curfew last night. Now, let's listen first to the peaceful protest that took place on Saturday during the day.
No justice, no peace! 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 No justice, no peace!
That was during the day. As the sun went down Saturday night, things took a turn. There was some violence, some destruction of property, and arrests. Here's a little bit of one encounter with a woman and a police officer. Some protesters were pepper sprayed, and there were dozens of arrests over the weekend. Here is an excerpt of protesters blocking the Main Street Bridge. Now, on Saturday night, police in downtown Jacksonville did deploy tear gas and flashbangs to disperse crowds. There is so much that we need to discuss right now. We're pleased to welcome Ben Frazier of the Northside Coalition of Jacksonville. He organized Saturday's peaceful daytime protest. Hi, Ben. Good morning.
Good morning, Jacksonville.
Good to have you on the show. Regular contributor Charles Griggs is also with us. Hi, Charles.
Good morning, Melissa. Good morning. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. And here in studio with me, WJCT reporter Sky LeBron, who covered the weekend protests. Sky, thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Melissa.
We have asked Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry and Sheriff Mike Williams to join the show. We have not been able to book them yet. But in the meantime, we're going to discuss all this and take your calls. Let us know your thoughts about the events of the last several days. It's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax, and our Facebook page is open. Ben Frazier, let's begin with you. You lead the Northside Coalition of Jacksonville. You were one of the folks that led the peaceful Saturday protest in downtown Jacksonville. Do we still have you on the line, Ben? Oh, we've lost Ben. We'll try to get him back. But as we do that, Charles Griggs, you know, I was at the Saturday daytime event just to take pictures and report on it. It was peaceful. It lasted several hours. And then later in the evening, things changed. And police did move in with tear gas, flashbangs, other ways of dispersing crowds. And there have been a number of arrests. And last night, the mayor and the sheriff instituted a curfew to lock up the streets, get people off the streets, and calm things down. What are your thoughts about what we've witnessed here over the last couple of days?
Well, Melissa, certainly, given the peaceful protest on Saturday, people did not really anticipate that there would be violence and arrests, and some of the actions that have been taken since then, to mark the progress that was made during the protest. And I've talked to a lot of people who were part of it, who weren't a part of it, and the range of emotion around these protests and activities cannot just be limited to what's going on here in Jacksonville. You know, people are angry across the country about issues that have not been dealt with over a long period of time. And it's unfortunate that some of it turned violent towards the end, and it's unfortunate that the mayor and the sheriff saw fit to institute a curfew last night. But at the same time, I think that this illustrates the seriousness of the divide in this community and what needs to be addressed immediately so that we can move forward as a community.
Ben Frazier, Northside Coalition of Jacksonville, you're back with us. Let's talk about the reasons you organized the protest Saturday. In particular, you were calling for JSO to release body camera footage that documents several controversial encounters between people of color in this city and law enforcement.
That is correct. In fact, the state attorney, the mayor, the sheriff have refused to release any of the body cam video for the past 3 years. We've invested millions of dollars in body cams, and we don't get a chance to see the videos. The people who pay for them cannot see them. What are they doing? Why is the sheriff hiding these videos? What about the public's right to know? This is not trust, transparency, or accountability. By contrast, what we are seeing on the part of the mayor, the state attorney, and the sheriff is cover-up, whitewash, corruption, deception, and dishonesty. We're asking them, Melissa, to back up and come clean. What we want is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
Now, Ben, let me ask you as a follow-up. The police and the state attorney are saying that they cannot release body camera footage around some of these cases. One that did result in the death of a FAMU student who was here in Jacksonville when he was shot by police, it's my understanding, because they're still being investigated. What's your response to that?
For lack of a better term, that's a lot of baloney. What they need to do is come clean with the public, stop coming up with excuses and hiding behind ongoing investigation, and tell us the truth. If there was something good on those tapes that portrayed JSO in a favorable light, the sheriff by now would have figured out how to release it. They're hiding something, clear and simple, and until they release it, then we won't know.
Let me ask you as well, Ben, you led a peaceful protest yesterday that went on for several hours. It assembled across the street from the police memorial building. About 1,000 people marched through downtown, marched around the jail, called also for the release of inmates at the jail due to the spread of COVID-19 inside the jail. What are your feelings this morning about the way things changed Saturday night? We saw some destruction of downtown property, some violent interactions between protesters and police.
Yes, Melissa, I feel comfortable addressing that. But I'm going to stay focused on what our demands are. We're demanding an end to the excessive use of force being exerted by JSO. We think that there are too many historically racially disproportionate police-involved shootings in this town. We're concerned, in fact, that some JSO rogue police officers may have been involved in summary executions of our very citizens who live in our city. We're looking
Which cases in particular can you run through them quickly? And then I'm going to talk to Sky for a minute.
That have been questionable police involved shootings, but here's one that we all need to take a look at. Police Sergeant John Nobles. He should be fired. Nobles has been involved in at least 4 different police involved shootings. This is heinous. This is egregious. And we're turning our heads, looking the other way, looking at other cities, other states, and not looking right here in Jacksonville where this is going on. In this town, JSO has a culture that says shoot first and ask questions later.
We're not going to
put up with it. We're demanding that there be FDLE or federal government investigation into all these historically racially disproportionate shootings.
We do need to note that
third party investigating these shootings.
I just want to note that we are speaking with Ben Frazier of the Northside Coalition of Jacksonville, regular contributor Charles Griggs, and our own reporter Sky LeBron. We'll go to your calls in just a moment. We have reached out to both the mayor and the sheriff's office for comment on this weekend's events. Ben's organization and many others over many years have called for not only the release, not only the institution of body cams, but also the release of the video and also an independent oversight review board to look into controversial police-involved shootings. That's been a longstanding call in this city. Sky LeBron, you covered both Saturday and Sunday's protests. We saw a weekend of protests in the city of Jacksonville, not just on Saturday.
Yeah, things were definitely a little more dispersed on Sunday. But yeah, Saturday I was there all day, went to the peaceful protest, and then later on in the day, as things started to escalate a bit, was also at those events.
Let's go to some calls now. Let's go to Todd at the beaches. Todd, good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
I was at the rally and march and demonstration Saturday. I think I want to give you an example of what we're talking about needs to change the culture and the fact that we are still living under institutionalized racism. Steve Zona, who's the president of the Fraternal Order of Police, has gone after and attacked one of the organizers that built this march. And I think that's abhorrent. I think that is abusive. And I think he needs to be called on the carpet for it. A couple of years ago, Steve Zona called myself and Ben Frazier thugs, leaders of...
And you're talking about the head of the local police union.
Yes, the Fraternal Order of Police. And what we're dealing with in this country, what is happening in this country, they're not riots. This is an uprising. This is a rebellion. People are resisting. What is happening is people are sick and tired of people being gunned down, innocent people being gunned down, and nothing is done about it. You got President Trump who has pouring oil on the fire of racism in this country. He's had the blood of people on his hands, not only here in this country, but around the world. And so, you know, I can't stress this enough. And I think what's happening now is more white people are opening their eyes as to what is going on in this country.
Todd, thanks for that.
And they're coming out into the streets.
You know, and I do want to note, we did see a multiracial crowd, both on Saturday and Sunday, protesting, and in some cases getting arrested. I want to read an email from a listener. Charles Griggs, you can respond to this. It's from a listener. He writes, destroying your own neighborhoods is counterproductive. You're putting African Americans out of work. You're destroying businesses and keeping businesses from wanting to invest in those areas. Your response?
Well, Melissa, I've spoken with, this is a point that I've heard people say in the community, and no one condones violence, and I think any reasonable person would not condone violence. But every man has a breaking point. When you've been pushed far enough, you're going to do what you believe is necessary to get the attention of people who have been ignoring you over time. So not trying to justify violence, but you really do get a clear understanding of why violence occurs. And what people are asking for this community to do in particular is to get out front and to start listening to people who are recommending significant policy changes in order to not only protect themselves, but to protect the entire community. You know, to Mr. Frazier's point regarding their body cams, I mean, this is not just asking for something that that he wants to carry around in his back pocket. There is no clear policy regarding the release of body cams that benefits the public use, benefits the public concern. You know, if people, legislators or policymakers got in the room and decided that they wanted to provide more access to the public regarding body cams, they could do that. They could move the needle on that subject right there.
Yeah,
right
now. Yeah. But, you know, Ben Frazier, there was a whole fight over body cams going back about 5 years or so. Police departments across the country were asked and encouraged and then pressured by groups like yours to invest in body cameras so that there would be video documentation of encounters with police and the people that they're interacting with. The whole idea behind that was to improve accountability, protect both the public and the police officer. And so we did get body cams in the city of Jacksonville, but we have yet to see any of the footage that's being
collected. The fact of the matter is, right now, Melissa, body cams are a multi-million dollar a year joke in Jacksonville. They're not being used as tools of accountability, but tools of injustice. The sheriff snuckered us, told us that the policy would be founded on civil rights principles, meaning that the aggrieved families could get those videos and the media. He has gone back on his word. He has been deceptive and dishonesty. There is a credibility question that is going on right here that we need to examine.
Now, let me just jump in and say that we heard the mayor say over the weekend, "We hear you," meaning the protesters, "and we will work with you," he said, Mayor Curry. Have you had any communication between the mayor or the sheriff's office and your office since this weekend's events?
Listen, I don't want to question anybody's heart, but the bottom line is that what we are hearing is political rhetoric, pablum for the masses. It was a promotional campaign, a dog and pony show. That's what we're getting. The sheriff has not called me. They don't want to hear from someone who disagrees with them. They don't want anybody who's not going to sugarcoat this issue. They want to stand up and do photo ops and tell the world, well, we're not going to let them burn our city down. The bottom line is that this city is everybody's city. But you're going to have to be honest and straightforward. You're going to have to back up and come clean and address these demands. We want to sit down face to face with the mayor and talk about getting these body cams released, about these irrational, historically, racially disproportionate number of police-involved shootings. We want to see this culture end. With regards to shoot first, ask questions later, we want to see John Noble fired. We want to see media and news departments investigating these questionable police shootings and murders. We have too many people, Kendra Austin, D'Angelo Stalwart, Dominican Williams, Selvin Hall. People are being murdered on our streets. We think that we got the same problem right here in Jacksonville that we've seen in police departments in other cities.
All right.
And it needs to change.
Let me go to some calls, Ben. I'm just going to go to some calls. Lots of folks waiting on hold to connect and discuss all of this. Pat in Mandarin. Go ahead, Pat.
Hey, thank you for having me on today.
Sure.
Basically, the whole reason why I called is these officers, they need to start carrying their own insurance. Similar to, say, a doctor and their malpractice insurance. Whenever a doctor has so many malpractice cases against him, his insurance goes up to the point to where they can no longer practice medicine. The same thing needs to happen with these officers. I mean, you look at, you know, what happened up there in Minneapolis. That officer had something like 19 complaints against him. And if he had insurance in place, then he would have been drummed out because he would no longer be able to.
That's an interesting suggestion, Pat. The police union is, and internal affairs are supposed to adjudicate these controversies. And certainly over the years, there's been criticism that bad cops aren't always held accountable, which is why we're here, where we are. But I appreciate your call. Let's go to Peter in Arlington. Peter, go ahead.
Yes, good morning. I just think that now's a good time for the sheriff and for the mayor, if they're really concerned and really have their eyes open, that it's a time for them to speak out more and to admit that, you know, this was a bad cop or there is racist cops in Jacksonville. They need to be weeded out. They don't want to, you know, here in Jacksonville, if you're police, then you're innocent. And there's just really no civilian oversight of that. And the mayor and sheriff are really against that. And they're just losing this opportunity to show us that they do care about all the citizens of Jacksonville, and not just the police, not just their partisan people. They're really missing the boat. And also, it's a very it's pretty bad to conflate the protesters with rioters. They really need to be separate. The rioters are criminals. They should be arrested. And to infer that all protesters are criminal, you know, that we know that's not the case. But the mayor, the sheriff, they don't want to admit that.
So thanks, Peter. Peter, thank you for that. Sky LeBron, you covered the news conference that featured the mayor and the sheriff. What did they say? Can you relate that back to our listeners?
Yeah, and I think that the caller brings up a very interesting point as well. As we heard Mayor Curry saying that, you know, we don't want to burn this city to the ground, and definitely using some very strong language. And I think, like the caller said, this could be an opportunity for the sheriff and for the mayor to potentially show how distressed they are and how they want to see change as well. We've seen across the country, there have been protests where the police have put down their shields, put down their equipment, and have actually stood with the protesters, have gone down the street with the protesters. And that's been a big deal. That has shown that there's going to be some type of cooperation.
Yeah, particularly since there's been quite a bit of chatter that Sheriff Mike Williams may be running for mayor himself in a few years. Lots of emails, tweets. Here's a tweet from a listener. I have many conservative friends who are angry about the COVID-19 business lockdowns by the mayor, but they were happy when the curfew was announced last night. I think it's more due to silencing protesters who they believe are un-American and don't meet their political viewpoint. Susan tweets the show, my friend was arrested for unlawful assembly yesterday in Jacksonville. Earlier in the day, her phone was broken when police knocked it out of her hands, leaving her without a contact to get home. She is an upstanding citizen and a medical student. This is not justice. Sean tweets us, speak to the fact that there are more and more videos showing white men starting property destruction and inciting violence. We have seen some of that in other cities, not as much here. Julie tweets the show. Please point out that Union President Steve Zona did come out on Facebook and condemn the killing of George Floyd. It would be a good thing to hear the same from our sheriff and mayor. Here's a message from Jane on Facebook. We have not faced our 400 years of history since the founding of this country. All right. Charles Griggs, what about the calls for the mayor and the sheriff to respond in a different way to what we're seeing?
Well, Melissa, this is a great opportunity, like Scott mentioned. One of the things that people are concerned about, you know, especially now, is that, you know, there is no real public opportunity for accountability for the sheriff's department. And from what we understand is that if, you know, the state law prohibits that for citizens review board type situations. But that can be changed. That's another piece of policy that can be changed, advocated for or against. And the sheriff and the mayor can definitely stand up and say, hey, we're all for accountability. And we want more of it, not less. And we will support a citizen-type review board, a third-party review situation where citizens can have more input and see how they can help understand what's going on within the police department, and not on the police department's terms, because that's what you get now.
And Ben Frazier, Northside Coalition of Jacksonville, obviously the big issue you've been pressing on for many years is more police accountability. And I know you'll continue to do that. But at the same time, this is the first day of June. And unless Governor Ron DeSantis changes course, thousands of people across this community and the state could soon be evicted from their dwellings because the rent and eviction relief measures that were put in place with the start of the COVID pandemic are due to expire this week, unless the state does something about that. That is only going to exacerbate the tensions and the frustrations we're seeing. Are you going to maybe also advocate for the city to extend its moratorium on evictions right now?
We were initially the first to call for that moratorium on evictions long before it was instituted. Certainly we are for the extension by way of the local perspective from the mayor and, of course, from the governor. People should be given a break from all this madness that's presently going on. Certainly their mortgages and their rents are among them. We need to be compassionate with what is going on among the constituents, our residents, our citizens out there.
Yeah. I mean, we've got the pandemic. We've got people out of work. We've got huge anger and upset over this issue. And we've got hurricane season starting today too, Sky.
Right, so,
I mean, it's just, the hits just keep on coming, guys. I want to get a few more calls on. Let's go to Gil in San Marco. Go ahead, Gil.
Good morning, Melissa and panel. Yeah, I've been looking at this thing and I'm an older guy and, I see a lot of this stuff is really orchestrated. We had a bar say the other day that this was Antifa, which is essentially a left-wing organization that is against some of the right-wing Nazi party people and some of these white supremacists. I can't see that Antifa has anything to do with this.
Oh, I accidentally cut Gil off. Charles Griggs, could you respond to that? It looked like there might have been some agents provocateur over the weekend in our city, muddying the waters a bit. And at the same time, members of the city council held a remote meeting this weekend saying that city officials need to do more to respond to these divisions and this upset in the community.
Yeah. What you see is, in some cases, people will, I don't want to say make excuses, but they'll use, some opportunity to distract from the actual issues. And what we do know is that the issues that were being peacefully protested against are issues that are real. And so whatever angst or violence that occurred after the fact or agitation that occurred really has nothing to do with the issue at hand, with the concerns from people who are out there, looking to protest in the first place. You can't draw attention from that. So those issues still have to be dealt with leadership. The city council, if they're serious about doing something, they will examine policies that are being left on the side of the road or for the unheard over the last 50 years or so, and they will act upon it. They will act upon policies that'll make body camera footage more accessible. They'll advocate for changes for JSO accountability. They'll advocate for more economic development tools for our community and in vulnerable situations. They will pass policies that'll protect people from a healthcare perspective. So they'll do these things if they're serious about doing something. And until they do that, you're going to continue to see protests and people agitate and people draw attention to all the things that have been a concern in this community for decades.
Let's go to Fred Matthews, our regular contributor calling in this morning. Hi, Fred.
Good morning, Melissa. Good morning, gentlemen.
Hello.
I just couldn't resist adding my two cents again.
I know you can't, Fred. Go ahead.
I continue to say that we get the government that we vote for. You know, this, for me, it continues to be a bit of deja vu. 36 years ago, Michael Alexander was shot by a patrolman over at what is now Martin Luther King Boulevard and Boulevard Street. And it aroused protests in the streets. I remember when we marched down Bay Street toward the sheriff's office protesting, there were sharpshooters on the roofs as if the protesters had some maniacal ways at them. When I looked at the pictures on Saturday night with the few protesters, wherever they were from, that were left, I'm seeing sharpshooters on the roof, really taking aim at these folks as if they were in some kind of major war effort against citizens of the United States, whether they were protesters or not. The sheriff got to bring out all of his tanks, his weapons. Half of the police force was all downtown. There had to be less than 150 people that were left. All of this to quash something. The biggest damage that took place was, of course, at the Supervisor of Elections office. I do feel bad for the officer that was cut.
Yes, and we need to note that. A JSO officer was stabbed in the neck over the weekend, and certainly we hope he is on the mend. But finish your thought, if you could, Fred, and then we'll close with Ben.
The key here is just what Ben has been talking about. It's the core of what we've been saying here forever. Citizen Review Board released a body cam video. They were quick to release the body cam video when Katrina Brown and Gaffney got into a dust-up on North Side. We had that body cam video within days because it was favorable to the police department. But that is public property, and we should have it out. That's
all
at
right.
The core of what we're asking for here in Jacksonville about all the things that have been going on.
Thank you, Fred.
And all we're seeing reflected in Jacksonville is what's being done all over the country. The sheriff has got to do it, and all it takes is a call from him. I received a call from Dale Carson at the height of the destruction, and we were able to work through it.
Former state attorney's office. Yeah. Okay, Fred. Thank you. That's our own Fred Matthews. Ben Frazier, where does your coalition go from here?
We stand ready to assist in helping to resolve this issue. We think that the sheriff, the state attorney's office, and the mayor should listen very closely to our demands and to meet with us so that we might be able to resolve the issues that separate us. We're sick and tired of them talking at us instead of with us. We want to be clear. We're solution-oriented, and we're ready to sit down and talk a couple of points. Steve Zona, stop trying to bully our comrades around who are standing up to fight for justice.
I want to thank you, Ben Frazier. We've got to take a break. I want to thank you, Ben Frazier. He heads up the Northside Coalition of Jacksonville. Regular contributor Charles Griggs and WJCT reporter Sky LeBron. Guys, thank you all for being with us this morning.
Thank you.
We'll continue to cover this, but we want to touch on some other news of the week in a moment. Later on, how businesses are planning for hurricane season. Yes, it begins today. But up next, Hubbard House, assisting survivors of domestic abuse. That's next.
Electro Lounge can now be heard Monday through Fridays at 10 p.m. till midnight and Saturdays from 9 to 11. Join us at the Electro Lounge only on 89.9 WJCT.
The Voidcast from WJCT and Void Magazine is a Northeast Florida musical journey into the Allman Brothers Band's formative period in Jacksonville.
It was just like, you know, I'm hearing this magic being born.
The bedrooms where locals are making pop music in isolation.
I play everything on this keyboard.
Northeast Florida's hip-hop scene, where women and queer people are claiming their space.
We kind of were tokenized to kind of be like the openers.
Hear it at wjct.org/voidcast, part of the Jacksonville Music Experience.
Introducing the Jacksonville Music Experience from WJCT, offering music lovers a variety of ways to enjoy favorite artists and discover new genres. Download the WJCT app or visit wjct.org/jacksmusic to start listening today.
Welcome back. Hubbard House in Jacksonville is working to get domestic violence survivors the help they need this week in a couple of different ways. They're holding a virtual walk, and they're also reopening an outreach center for walk-in appointments. CEO Gail Patton is on the line. Hi, Gail.
Hi, Melissa.
Well, you know, you're having a virtual awareness event this week, like so many other organizations, because it's safer, given that we're still in a pandemic. Let's begin with that. What's happening?
Well, we are having a virtual walk June 1st through June 7th, and we are asking that people do a few things. First of all, go to hubbardhousewalk.com and sign up and let us know how many steps are you pledging for peace for victims of domestic violence. And then share on your social media what you're doing, share about our text line and our hotline so we can get the word out. And then this week, begin to take those steps towards your pledge. And what reason we did this is for a couple of reasons. One, because what we have found out is that during quarantine that the instances of domestic violence as reported by JSO went up 20%, and we weren't surprised about this because people now are locked in the home with their abusers without as much resources to get to for help. So now as things are beginning to come back where people are going out and about their business, then we are seeing more calls for service. We're seeing more people who are in need. So we're wanting to get that number out. And so the number one reason for this walk is awareness, to let people know about what's going on. And then, you know, just on a practical level, we've all been isolated in our houses. Wouldn't it be great to get out and walk and take some of those extra pounds off for a good cause?
Yeah, and, absolutely.
And to make those steps. So it gives us an opportunity to walk with a purpose. And I know myself and my little Yorkie are going to get out there and walk, not only to create awareness, but just to get that exercise in that we all need. And then last but not least, letting people know that we're still here and that, you know, we're just part of a bigger community, and we appreciate all of the support that Jacksonville gives us. And going out and walking will show that support not only for Hubbard House but for survivors. And then posting your walk and your experiences on your different websites and social media so that we can see what you're doing to get the word out for survivors.
Now, you also are reopening your outreach center today or this week. It's at 6629 Beach Boulevard. People can just walk in and get help. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. So that will be open Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., where people who can literally just walk in if they want help, if they want to brainstorm about what's going on in their relationship. We can help safety plan with them. We can help them look at what resources and alternatives they might have to their situation. We can link them up with other resources in the community. In addition to providing safety planning and resources, we also have staff who can help people with housing assistance. We can help people with getting a job. We do ask that people wear masks when they come to the outreach center, and if they don't have them, we do have some that they can wear and take back with them. And we've also done social distancing in our lobby so that people are sitting 6 feet apart, and then also have other procedures in place throughout the building so that we're being as safe as we can during this time, but also being available for survivors, because they are getting out now. They are getting out and literally walking into a situation that may save their lives when they come through those doors asking for help.
With everything that's going on, Gail, it's just important to continue getting the word out to people who may be isolated, out of work, in a vulnerable, dangerous situation in this pandemic, not just women, but sometimes men as well, that there's help out there. I mean, these are horrible times for so many people, and the tensions have just gotten worse, right?
Exactly. And if you think about it, you know, we've all been dealing with this COVID-19 crisis, but layered on top of that, where there's abuse in the family, it does tend to escalate and can get more dangerous. And that's why we actually instituted our text line during the height of the crisis, because we realized people couldn't maybe call and speak verbally to us, but they certainly could text and pretend they're doing something else and get information. So in getting that awareness out, the text line is 904-210-3000. 3698, and of course our regular hotline number, 904-354-3114, is also available for people. We just want victims to know that we are here for them and their kids, and that there is help and there is hope, and all they need to do is reach out, whether it's call the hotline, text us, or walk into the outreach center, that they can get help. And our outreach center is actually co-located with our thrift store, which is actually having its grand reopening tomorrow, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. So if you're needing to get out and shop because you haven't been able to for a few weeks, go to our thrift store because it raises money for a great cause.
And that is also on, I want to say Beach Boulevard, right?
Right. It's located right next door to the outreach center.
To the outreach center. That's a good thrift shop, by the way. And I know my thrift shops.
Well, thank you. I love it myself.
That's a really good one. And so that is a way you can support Hubbard House. So yeah, things are opening back up. As we speak with Gail Patton, CEO of Hubbard House, who is trying to get the word out right now about how to make sure you reach out and get support if you are a survivor of domestic violence or you know someone who is. This has been a tough time for nonprofits like yours too, Gail, and so you're asking for the public to support you financially or in any way that they can, because certainly nonprofits like yours are more vital than ever right now.
Right, and we know that people are in tough times themselves, but as you said, you know, we're here and continue to do the work to reach out to those who are in the most vulnerable situation. So whatever anybody can do to support us, whether it's giving money, whether it's giving us a donation, whatever you can do, but we're also mindful that everybody's in a tough situation right now, but we certainly depend and have depended for the last 44 years on the generosity of the community, and the community has always come forward in order to make sure that these services are still available for survivors and their families.
Can you one more time quickly let folks know how they can contact Hubbard House?
So they can contact our hotline at 904-354-3114 or the text line at 904-210-3698.
And again, Hubbard House's Outreach Center and Beach Boulevard, and Thrift Shop are reopening this week in the 6,000 block of Beach Boulevard. So you can also access those resources beginning this week. Gail Patton, it's good to talk to you virtually. Hopefully the next time we talk, it'll be face-to-face. Thank you so much for sharing all of this with us.
Thank you, Melissa, for bringing this awareness. I really appreciate it.
Gail Patton, she is CEO of Hubbard House here in Jacksonville. A quick break, and up next, guess what? It's June 1st. You know what that means? The start of hurricane season here in Florida, as if we weren't already dealing with enough, right? Well, we will have some tips for you on how business owners need to prepare for what's expected to be a very active hurricane season this year. That's in a moment. You're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9. We'll be right back.
Miami historian, author, and historic preservationist Arva Moore Parks passed away on May 10th. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, will remember Arva Moore Parks. We'll look back at the Everglades News newspaper and discuss Millie Francis, known as the Creek Pocahontas. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Fresh Air, actress Christine Baranski, who stars in The Good Fight, playing a brilliant commanding partner in a progressive law firm. It's a spin-off of The Good Wife. Baranski also is known for her comedic roles, and for work in stage and screen musicals, including Into the Woods, Chicago, and Maine. Join us.
Today at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
How much more of this can we stand?
This is not a protest. This is not in the spirit of Martin Luther King Jr. This is chaos.
The condemnation from all sides has done nothing to quell widespread unrest and rage. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Now's the time for you to have your say. Join me next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Hi, I'm John Lansing, NPR's CEO. We work with hundreds of local stations across the U.S., including this one, to bring you the most impartial, honest, and trustworthy news we can. It doesn't start with me, or at NPR, or even at this station. It all begins with one person, you. Be a pillar of support for this station. Please donate today.
Become a WJCT sustainer today. Go to WJCT.org/radio, and thank you.
Welcome back. Well, the 2020 Atlantic hurricane season officially starts today, and I'm sorry to tell you that experts are predicting it's going to be an active one. So we've got to get ready. How should business owners prepare, especially this year? Because we're also, let's not forget, still in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic. Bernie Dandridge of Florida Capital Bank is on the line with some advice. Hi, Bernie.
Good morning. How are you?
Great, thanks. Great to have you on the show. Now, we are seeing our local economy beginning to reopen just as the hurricane season begins as well. We're expecting as many as 10 hurricanes, 3 to 6 of which, according to meteorologists, could be major ones. And so 40% of small businesses impacted by a natural disaster don't reopen. So let's begin with that. Given that we're going to have an active storm season and we still are in a pandemic and small business has been hammered by that, what's your advice for business owners right now trying to deal with all of this?
Well, gosh, it's almost overwhelming, isn't it?
Yeah.
But there's so many different things happening right now for small businesses. It's the time today now, especially in light of all these different conflicts, to make sure that your group of support consultants, your group of support structure for your business are all intact, and you're working very hard with them to make sure you're trying to forecast out and think about things before they happen. How do you come back into play with 25% opening, 50% opening? What's your true break-even point? How can you get there more quickly? How can you reduce cost? How can you possibly create a new marketing line? You know, lots of different issues in that regard. Specifically in regard to the hurricane season, I have found, for the last 4 or 5 years, I've worked on a credit committee that approves disaster loans for people that have gone through the hurricanes and have needed money as a bridge to get to their insurance money. And that program's all done through the state and through the Small Business Development Center at UNF, which is fantastic, by the way. If you're a small business owner today and you don't have a relationship over at the SBDC, you desperately need one, I promise you. And you should reach out to them. But there's about 4 things I'd like to talk about real quickly, and I'll just go through them one by one so that we can talk about them. But the first one is to make sure that you obviously have the written and the digital list of all your insurances, including names of agents, companies, mm-hmm. account numbers,
phone
numbers.
That goes for all of us, right? Not just business owners, homeowners, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, that's so very true. And you need it to where you can find it on the web if necessary. And you need to have a written copy in your pocket just in case something happens to technology. So I would strongly recommend that that's the very first thing you need to do. That's the starting place. Understanding what your local community's process is. What's the exit strategy for your community? If by chance you know, I know I've lived in Jacksonville since 1978, 79, and we've never really truly had a direct hit in my time here. Knock on wood, and pray to God it never happens. But if we were to, you know, what would be your exit strategy? You know, think about all these things. Do you need to have your windows boarded up? How's that going to work? Do you have fresh plywood, or is it thick enough? All those issues need to be thought about and talked about. But let's talk a little bit more about business records real quick. We had a hurricane not too long ago that brought in a flood into downtown, and the businesses that were downtown, some of them couldn't get back in there to their offices, and so they were locked out of their business records because they didn't have them all on the cloud. So you need to look for a way in which you can have safe deposit of your records for your business, both financial and customer records. Customer records are going to be very, very important in this process. One of the things I've seen where customers are really successful in bringing their customers back as quickly as possible is when they start to interact with the customer, even when everybody is trying to repair.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sending out pictures of what's going on.
And we're only a couple minutes left in the show, Bernie. Your final piece of advice, if you could.
Okay, I would just maximize communication with both your employees, with your consultant group, and most importantly, with your clients. You need to have a list of customers that you're communicating with constantly.
Yeah, so this is all such great advice for all of us, because if you're just tuning in, we're wrapping up a conversation with Bernie Dandridge of Florida Capital Bank. It's June 1st. That means hurricane season has officially begun, with a high number of named storms predicted. 3 to 6 major hurricanes could be in our sights this season here in Florida. So follow his advice and get prepared. Bernie, it's especially vital to get all this in a row now, given that we also have the ongoing pandemic. So I want to thank you for your insights. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. God bless y'all.
He's Bernie Dandridge of Florida Capital Bank. And that's our show. Thanks for listening, and thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Josh Torres is show director. Station news director is Jessica Palumbo, and our digital editor is Bill Bortsfield. Please keep those emails coming. We value your feedback. Send them to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And if you missed any part of today's show, our podcast will be up later today on our website or wherever you find your podcasts. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Let's connect then.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.